This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Well, howdy, Place to Be Nation. Welcome to another installment of Making the Cut for the PTBN Greatest WWE Wrestler Ever Project. I am JT, and here with me, as always, my partner in crime on this show, the one and only Canadian brother from another mother, and that is Aaron George. Aaron D. George, how are you tonight?
Yeehaw! Is it weird that you said that and we have the same mother?
So, I think this is episode 5.
It feels like episode 100.
Yeah, it feels like we've done a lot, but it's only the fifth one. I guess we did a couple. I always say we do a few pod blasts, but I think we may have only done one. For whatever reason, it seems like we've done a lot of these types of things. And maybe because we just talk about it like every day. Maybe that's why.
We trailblazed the pod blast with Marty Jannetty.
That's
and then never spoke again.
He's getting a spot on my list just because he was the original pod blast guy. And then Scott and Greeny did like 15 in like 3 weeks and never did another one.
Yeah. And I did like 3 with Ben and 2 with Greg, and then we never talked again.
Yeah, that was it. But this has been a hella fun project. It's winding down, sadly. Ballots are due December 31st by midnight, before midnight. The balloting system is up on the Facebook group and also on the Google Doc that's been shared all around, but you can reach out to us directly if you need a copy of that. You're going to go in and automatically, it'll automatically tally once you enter in all of your submissions. You'll go in and type in all your names 1 to 100, and you'll do so by not using nicknames or anything like that. So do not put Little Miss Bliss Alexa Bliss. Just fucking put Alexa Bliss. Do not put Bret the Hitman Hart. Just put Bret Hart. Do not put the Beast from the East Bam Bam Bigelow. Just put Bam Bam Bigelow. Keep it very, very succinct and simple to help us organize all these votes. And then I think, you know, there'll be a lot of fallout for this, Aaron. Like, I think we'll spend probably, you know, over months breaking all these lists down and the results down and revealing the list and all that stuff. So the project doesn't end at the end of the year. Just this part of it does.
I plan to bitch about this for years if it doesn't go my way.
It's probably not going to go your way.
Nope.
Nope. So tonight we're going to talk about Animal from the Legion. Not really.
Yes. I've been wanting to do this one from the beginning.
Why should he be number 300? Tell me.
Is it because of the spider on his head?
You know, it's funny. My original idea for the show, if we had like unlimited time, was to go through every single one, every single person on the list.
Wow.
That was my secret dream, and we didn't get there. Will kind of did, though. I think he almost went through everyone. Anyway, it's been a lot of fun, and at the last episode, toward the end, we kind of went off on this wild tangent where we just started comparing random people instead of discussing cases, and we thought that would be a cool idea for an episode of this show. So instead of giving cases for like 4 or 5 guys this time, we're going to do 2 triple threat battles.
And versus.
Versus. All 6 of these versuses are already guys that should be on every list. And are probably going to be pretty high on most lists. But we wanted to break down the case for them against each other to help you determine where and what order these guys should be in. So, again, these guys are going to make the list, but we want to debate the order that they should be on your list. And I guess we'll dive right in, right? So we have 2 triple threat matchups. The first one, I guess we'll call the close, but not quite there, but maybe like strong, real worker, scientific worker guys. Or, well, I guess one's not really a scientific guy. I don't know. It feels like there's a tiering to it, right? I feel like we're at like 1C and 1B, you know, something like that.
Yeah. And this first one, I think, would be 1C.
Right. And that is Bret Hart versus CM Punk versus Mick Foley.
Oh.
Yeah. It's a good one. So on my list, which, by the way, ding, ding, ding. Even though I'm going to kill my gimmick, someone told me by announcing this on the show. My list, Aaron, is completed. I've done it. Shh. I've made my list.
I'm proud of you.
Yes.
Because it's been a long time.
3 years is a long time.
to be a champion.
I haven't submitted it. I have not submitted it. So I'm not officially finalized and done. But I am. I actually have a list of 110 people that I expect to be my list.
And do you feel they're all in the right position?
Yeah, I do. There's a few that I'll probably jigger around here and there. But I think overall, I think I'm in a good spot of where I want to be. Like, there are a couple of guys I've realized as we've talked, like, oh, I forgot so-and-so. And I've worked them in. But I think overall, actually, my framework is pretty much where it's going to be. I may move a guy here or there a little bit if I catch a match and or something. But I think overall, I think I have the general feel of where my list will be.
Yeah, that's where I'm at, too. But I think, you know, since you've got the gimmick of the list now, maybe I should just tear mine apart.
Yep.
Just rip it up. Be completely confused.
And then you have none. And I'll have just mine.
Ludwig Borga, number one.
Was Ludwig even nominated?
Why would he be?
He had a cool song.
That anthem, I still know it to this day, and I studied the country of Finland in high school because of it.
Do. It's like the random things you know because of wrestling, like the Michigan fight song because of the Steiner Brothers. The Finnish national anthem because of Ludwig Borga. The words to the fucking Russian national anthem.
Because of Nikolai Volkov?
Yeah. The words. I the only reason I knew O Canada for years was Robert Goulet singing at WrestleMania 6.
At WrestleMania 6. when I studied Julius Caesar for the first time, the main kid, for those of you who don't know, the main character's name is Marcus Brutus. And so to this day, I picture him as Brutus the Barber Beefcake. Killing Julius Caesar.
Well, he did stab and butcher a friendship and Starcade, so he followed in his footsteps. All right, so these three guys I have pretty high on my official list that's been created. They're all within the top 14, these three guys. Same for you?
Same for me, all within the top 14.
Okay. So do you want to start with one guy?
Well, I think you should say, like, what order you have them in, and then we'll kind of fight it. Like, it'll probably be different, and then we'll fight it out.
It may not be different, but we'll see. So I have Bret Hart first.
Yeah.
And it's gonna be different. Okay. I have him four spots above CM Punk.
Okay.
And Foley is right after Punk.
Wow. Okay, so it's different. I have CM Punk, and then somebody else, and then Foley, and then Bret Hart.
Okay.
So mine are actually really close together.
Okay. Yeah.
Whereas you have Bret quite a ways ahead of Punk and Foley.
Right. And yeah, I feel good about the guys in between too.
Who are they? Just out of curiosity.
Bob Backlund,
mm-hmm.
Brock Lesnar, and Daniel Bryan.
Oh wow. Okay. Yeah, I got Kurt Angle in between Punk and Foley.
Okay. I have Kurt as right after Foley for me.
Okay,
I feel like Kurt. Not that he's part of this, but the reason
we're
gonna
talk about Kurt now.
Yeah, why not? Make it a four-way. The reason I have Kurt a little bit lower, and I'm a big Kurt Angle guy, guys. The reason I have him there is I feel like he didn't reach the level that Foley did of like mainstream notoriety. Like to me, that factors in just a little bit. Like when I'm really nitpicky, like.
Sure.
For what Foley had to work with, and I also thought Foley's way more diverse. Like, I think that's a big part of his ranking, that he took three separate characters, and they were all, like, really good. And you could actually argue four, because there were really two versions of Mankind, right? There was. And five. I mean, there were really two versions of Dude Love. I mean, you could say that he took five completely distinct characters and made them work in all different ways, and they were all successful. You had original Mankind, which is the creepy piano-playing malcontent. And then you have, Happy Summer of Love, Do Love, which was endearing and fun after Foley had been brooding for 2 years or whatever it was. Then you had just Cactus Jack, the wild, maniacal brawler that he always was. Then you had Evil Do Love, which was great. Just corporate Do Love with the teeth and the glasses and the jacket and everything. And then you had, like, lovable, goofy Mankind from like 98, 99 that was just getting thrown off cages and was tapped in the head. You know, so it's like, I mean, do you agree that he took those five faces and all of them were well, like you could think of the characteristics and key matches for all five of those guys?
Yeah, sure. I mean, some worked better than others.
Right, but they all worked.
I feel of all of them, the weakest is probably the happy-go-lucky Dude Love.
And that had the shortest run.
Yeah, Corporate Dude Love is great, but Corporate Dude Love really isn't, like, in the ring isn't that much different than...
No, but character-wise, like, how many guys have had five gimmicks and they all worked?
Rikishi? Did he make a difference? Did he end up making any difference?
He made zero difference in 1995. And I think he only had three, really. I mean, he had Headshrinker. He had, I mean, maybe four if you want to be generous and say, like, the month that he was, like, Rikishi Fatu, the sumo guy. I mean, well, but no, really, he only had Headshrinker, Making a Difference, and then Dancing Fat Man.
You're forgetting, how dare you? See, this is your U.S. bias coming
in.
Oh,
the Sultan. Yes.
The Sultan. How did you leave the Sultan off?
Okay, so he had two successful and two garbage ones then.
Well, okay, but what about Rikishi with the low music claiming he was a bad man?
See, I don't see that as a different character.
He stopped dancing.
Still dressed the same. I mean, if you want to say, like, Dude Love, if you want to take that away and say, like, the two Dude Loves are pretty much the same guy, I can give you that. I think the Foley's count as two separate, though. I mean, the Mankind's count as two separate characters. Like, they were wildly different.
Yeah. Yeah, I would give you that. I'm not actually arguing for Rikishi here.
I mean, like, Kane... I mean, would he have one that worked, you know?
Like, what are you talking about? The dentist was terrifying.
Yeah, he was. Beefcake, he only had one in the WWF, and everything else was true. Like, I'm just trying to think of how many guys have had what Foley had. And his were all compressed into, like, this tight span, you know? Anyway.
Chavo Guerrero and Kerwin White, have we talked about him?
Chavo's only gimmick was that he was fucking terrible. So there was a thread on the Facebook group about Chavo the other day, and I just, you know how much power it takes in me to not just go in there and say, fuck Chavo, he's not getting ranked anyway. He should not be ranked by anybody.
You shouldn't hold yourself back.
Well, the problem is I think I've already done that in that message thread like twice. Yeah, like I see people saying like he'll be in their 80s and 70s, and I'm like, he's not even in my 270s. Like
he's gone. He could fuck himself.
He is like, I mean, he's not even a thought. Like, I didn't even, like, think, like, should I? No, like, it wasn't even, like, a momentary fleckle of fucking light in my mind of that he could be anywhere near my list.
No, I didn't even consider him.
No. I don't even consider him a person at this point.
No, he's not a human being. He's a... So. What about Tensai?
Yes. Yes, sure.
Well, look, you had Albert, right? You had A-Train. Okay, you had Tattoo Albert versus just Hairy Back Albert, A-Train, and now you have Japanese Tensai.
True. So I'm talking about guys that actually had characters that worked.
Oh, come on.
Not just four characters.
When you heard that train, ting, 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 you knew shit was going down.
Well, A-Train, like the big guy banging Sable was pretty entertaining for like 3 weeks when they were doing that thing.
Yeah, sure, sure.
Anyway... Mick Foley, incredibly deserving. Foley marvels me a bit because he's a guy I didn't really think of when I was trying to think of like my original top group. Like this is like months and months ago.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden he popped in my head and I'm like, damn, he's like a real consummate WWF guy. Like he is someone that, you know, easily climbs the ladder. And you think of, so if you think of his output and then you think of his later years, right? So you think of the Orton stuff. And then the 06 stuff. Like he's come back and had like really good shit that just padded his resume and his character stuff and his memorable moments through the roof. Promo skills through the roof. Like, have we talked? I feel like we've talked about Foley. Have we done one on him yet in these episodes?
No, I don't think we have.
Okay, so good. I mean, moments through the roof, literally, through the roof of the cage. Promo skills, like, what, top 3% all time, would you put him as a wrestler?
Yeah, of course.
Right, he's up there. So a guy that can cut a serious promo, a maniacal promo, goofy promo. I mean, he can do anything, you know. And one of the saddest Foley promos, and he talks about it in his book, is the night after Hell in a Cell when he comes out and cuts this like serious promo, and he realized kind of that wrestling's passed him by and that no one wants to hear it, and they just want to like see like the bumps and shit. Like he just kind of realized like, okay, this stuff I was doing like 3 years ago, or as recent as like 2 years ago in ECW, like the serious hate-filled fucking promos, like no one gives a shit about it anymore. They just want whatever, you know.
They want me to put my body in.
They just want me
serious
to die,
danger.
Basically. That's it.
Yeah, but, I will say that like I don't know if he cut his best promos in WWE. Like as compared to say his ECW promos, which are just kind of on another planet. Like,
yeah,
I don't mean that as a major knock, but like.
Right. But I think even with that said, in WWF, he's probably still like a top 3% talker.
Yes, I would agree. I would agree.
I mean, this is a guy that interviewed himself as three different characters and made it compelling.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, he's had enough good ones in the company to let you know that he's an all time.
Sure.
I mean, even just those sit downs with Jim Ross.
is he a better promo than CM Punk?
Because
I think we can agree he's a better promo than Brett, right?
Yes. Brett had exactly one good year of promos, and that's 1997.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, he had spots. Like, when he was champion in, like, 92 and 93, like, you know, he was solid.
He was fine.
And even 96, when he starts to get angry, like, he was good.
You know, everybody knows. There's a lot of that.
The SummerSlam.
I don't care if it's Shawn Michaels, Psycho Sid.
My lovable brother Owen.
Owen.
Yeah, so Foley's better than Brett on the mic.
Yeah.
Punk?
And Punk's better than Brett on the mic, too, right?
Oh, yeah, by far.
Yeah. So then we're down to Foley Punk for promos.
I think it's a dead heat.
Hmm.
They're both really. It's tough because they're different eras. Like, Foley today is not good. You know what I mean? Like, but it's not his fault. Like, he's had decades of brain damage. You know what it's like? And it's just a different era. Like, Punk was a great promo in the era of angst millennials that want their indie promotion to be number one. You know what I mean? Like, that guy. Like, the fucking hipster. You know what I mean? Like, that's. Like, would his promo style have worked? And maybe he's adept enough at it to have transported back to like 96 and been effective. Maybe he's that good. I don't know. But
he's certainly more articulate in his promos.
Yeah, but I think Foley was too. Yeah, I think Foley was too. Surprisingly articulate, you know?
Yeah.
But like, Punk fed off.
Comparing, like, it's close either way.
So what's Punk's best pro? Like, do you feel like Punk feeds the best off the realism that's permitted in today's products? Whereas I think Foley existed in this world of kayfabe still and had to work within those constraints a bit more. I mean, he really blew up at the dawn of Attitude when they were loosening the restrictions on talking about that stuff.
Yeah.
But like Punk doing those sit-down interviews with Jim Ross.
Yeah, like that's just it. His stuff was real. His good early stuff too was reality based, right?
True. Yeah, but he wasn't preying off the angst of the fans. I guess is my point. He was coming from I guess Punk was coming from internal strife as well. So,
yeah, I mean, you want to say yes and no on Punk because I mean, like his most famous promos are like the Summer of Punk promos, right?
Right, the pipe bomb, yeah,
pipe bomb, which is actually in itself a very brilliant promo because even though he's doing all that inside stuff, he's still selling that match.
Right. Oh, like, for sure. I mean, he made that match must see overnight.
Yeah. But that being said, like his promos when he was at the Straight Edge Society, like against, say, like Rey Mysterio singing Happy Birthday to his kid, are just as
tremendous,
good, if not better.
I mean, I'm not trying to demean or dismiss his skills at all. I honestly think that's as dead of a heat as you can get. And I think they're very comparable because if you wanted to compare like a Punk and a Rock, say, right? Rock, very catchphrase, coked up, fast paced. Like a guy like a Foley and a Punk are very similar in their delivery, very similar in their style, the thought process. I think they're both kind of the Jake family tree, you know, like more measured in the way they speak. Whereas Rock is almost like a descendant of like Hogan and Warrior with like the fired up 80s style, you know, bouncing all around, hitting one liners like that. That's a whole different style to me. Even Austin is like so different than a Foley or a Punk. I just think they're kind of in a class. I'm trying to look up and down this list. I mean, who else would you even put in their class like in that style? A Flair? I mean, even Flair's more flamboyant, you know?
Yeah.
I guess maybe like a Jericho, like late era Jericho.
Yeah, late era. Yeah, there's really nobody. They are very unique in that aspect.
Yeah, I'm looking through. I mean, I don't.
Mark Henry.
Well, is he gonna be like a Regal? But you know, he doesn't have the charisma.
No, not even close. No, I can't think of anyone really.
Cornette, Heyman, maybe Heyman.
Yeah, maybe.
But as far as people on the list, I don't think there's really anyone that's close to them. That's not, you know, everyone else is more of the, like even now it's like a Vince, you know, it's like very demonstrative and over the top. Like those are two guys that are very just grounded in their style. So I think it's a dead even. I think it's hard to separate the two.
Yeah, it is tough. Like, I think for me, Punk's promos have gotten me to, have made me more excited about matches than say Foley's have. Like, I think Foley's great and articulate and everything we've talked about, but like, Punk makes me want to see the matches through his promos, and I don't know.
What about Foley stuff with like in 06, like with Edge and Flair? Like, I thought that stuff was great with Flair. Like that,
yes, yeah,
I mean
that was
talking
right.
people into or the Orton stuff with him in the chair with the barbed wire bat. His promos leading up to Triple H in 2000 were great when he unveils his Cactus Jack. I mean, he's stalking down to the ring like that sold that whole Rumble match.
I guess. I mean, I guess I didn't really look at it that way. Like it. Like it wasn't so much the promo as it was that it was Cactus Jack that made the difference for me on that one.
Yeah, maybe.
You know,
but any, I mean, it could have been Goofy, someone doing that, and he made it work with the way
he
transformed from character to character within that promo and sold you on what he was going to do to Triple H. You know.
Yeah. Whereas, like Punk was getting me emotionally invested in wrestling at age like 31.
Right.
Which is no one is. Come close to being able to do that. I don't know if that should count for him or against him, but it's interesting to think about.
Do you think Foley did that for people of that era? Because I've heard people say it.
Maybe. I can't speak to it. Like I was 18, 17, right. 18. You know, like,
he was a big draw for me in like 97. I was a big Cactus fan, and like so when he came in as Mankind, I was pretty upset. Like I remember thinking like this is stupid. And then he won me over. And even some of those promos, like the ones like him in the basement with Paul, like, you know, he was really good with those, with the screeching and all that stuff. And then the sit down with Jim Ross at the time was like amazing. And it turned him face like overnight.
Yeah.
I remember I went to King of the Ring 97 and like that was right after those promos aired. And at the end of those promos, remember, he lights Jim Ross or he puts him in the Mandible Claw. And
right.
he's still
it's Kane who lights
right,
him on
Kane
fire.
Lights him on fire. But he's still meant to be a heel. But the story was so compelling and so good that he was getting cheered like right away at King of the Ring, like weeks later. So maybe Punk sells you the matches, but I feel like Foley sells himself.
Maybe. Yeah.
And others, but,
yeah. So maybe it's close. It's more of a dead heat than I thought.
It's funny because the more I'm kind of in my head accelerating to like the other categories, knowing we're heading there, and I'm starting to think of these guys. It's like it's crazy to think because they're so different, but they may be the closest pair of guys I can think of on this list that are like you can also make them one. You know what I mean? Like, so we get to their wrestling skills and they're wildly different, but I can't sit here and tell you one. I can't say one is better than the other. Like I feel like Foley is one of the best brawlers of all time, especially when you come from a psychology standpoint. Like, think of his brawls and that how much of a story they tell. Like, I mean, a match with Undertaker at Hell in a Cell, like, that could have just been a stunt show. But there's so much drama wrapped in it because of the character that he's built and the legacy between that feud and what it is. And, you know, he gets thrown off the cage, and then he stands up, you know, and then he goes through the cage and he still gets back up. He's got the tooth in his nose and somehow he throws Taker on the tacks and he's got the man, you know, like it's still a play unfolding because of this character that just won't give up. And Over the Edge 98, I think is like one of those brilliantly booked and told stories. And yes, the booking plays a big part of that, but as Foley as the heel in that role leading through the match and the way he's doing what he's doing, like that back-to-back matches he has with Austin 98 are just tremendous. So I think as a worker, Foley, to me, is one of the greatest brawlers of all time, one of the best psychology guys. But I think Punk is one of the best psychology guys from a non-brawling standpoint. And he's a great brawler, too. But, you know, he's great at piecing matches together and you know, leading the crowd through the match and all that, too. So I think they're both excellent in their own way. Like, I think it's razor thin there, too, for me.
Yeah. See, I don't know. I agree with you when you're talking about the King of the Ring match in terms of the drama unfolding during the match. I don't know how much of that had to do with his character or his past with Undertaker. And I know that sounds kind of crazy because they feuded like 2 years earlier. But I remember at the time not understanding why they were together. I don't know if you understand what I mean? Like I was like, why the match felt thrown together.
It was
at the time.
It was.
And going into it, I wasn't interested in it at all. However, once it started, obviously.
Right, and that's kind of my point, right? That Foley is such a good wrestler that he took a match that didn't have a ton of hype or heat.
Yeah.
And one that should have ended within 2 minutes. Right. I mean, it should have ended within minutes, not even. And then made it a, you know, made it a must see as it's going on, not just for the stunts, but for the pathos that plays out after. You know what I mean? And then yeah. he comes back at the end of the night, amazingly, and gets involved in the main event. I don't know how he's even fucking walking at that point. but I think the only thing that maybe hurts Foley a bit is Punk didn't really have that end of run stretch where he was just fucking terrible. You know what I mean? Like
99 is rough for Foley,
right?
In ring,
you know. But his character was so good in 99, so it, you know,
yeah,
he kind of got by on that. But
yeah,
those blue sweatpants were awful.
Oh yeah, and you could tell he just like, I mean, when you get to the Val Venus match and stuff like that, it's just not clicking.
Right.
I would say that something else that Punk has that Foley doesn't have, and I don't know if I've ever made this point to you before. I'm sure I've told it to people. I think Punk had the star quality to be at the level of, I don't know about at the level of an Austin, but to be that next guy.
Right.
Whereas I don't think Foley had that star quality. Not that he didn't have star quality,
right,
because he did, and he was great. Like, I don't want anybody to think I'm shitting on Foley. Like, I loved him. Like, I loved him at the time. I love him now. But there's something intangibly different with Punk.
But let me ask you this. Did that intangible exist before the Summer of Punk? Because I was going to say, while he doesn't have that end of run dead patch, he had that little bit of a stretch before the Summer of Punk where he was kind of checked out and seemed like he was on his way out the door and not really, you know, that was probably his weakest stretch. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So how much did the Summer of Punk and the loosening of the chains allow him to come across as the guy that could maybe carry the company? Like, in 09, was CM Punk giving you that vibe? When he's, or 08, when he's feuding with fucking John Morrison and JBL and all that stuff?
I would say he gave me the vibe as early as 06.
Okay. When as a top guy.
Well, he wasn't a top guy yet.
No, but he...
But he had the call, yes.
Okay, so you thought he had... Like, to me, at that point, he came across as someone who could be, like, a great Brett.
When he's standing in the ring with the Hardy Boys and DX, and he's the one getting all the cheers, like, that was a special moment.
Like, yeah, but Jeff Hardy had moments like that, too. So, my point is, like, do you see him at that point as a guy like an Austin or Rock in 2006? You saw him as that potential?
Yes, because... Okay. He's different than Jeff Hardy in that, like, you could see that Jeff Hardy was missing certain tools.
Right.
And you could see the tools were there for Punk. I don't know in 2006 how I knew he'd be as great a worker as he was, although I did think he was very good based on some of his past work and other things. But you could see how good a talker he was. You could see how good his natural charisma was.
See, I didn't like him as a face in that run.
I didn't love him as a face either, and I actually think he's a better heel than a face myself, although I do think he's a good face at times.
Well, he got better at it. Like, his face run in, like, 12 and 13 when he's shooting with Heyman and everything was, like, pretty good.
Yes. I would agree with that. What was I saying before that? Yes, but I could see all the tools were there, and I think, if anything, 2007 and 8 were not helpful for him, but I don't think he was ever bad.
No.
In those years. And 2009, absolutely. Like, in that run with Jeff Hardy, like,
he's awesome. To me,
he showed all the qualities of a top guy. And then the next year, you get the Straight Edge Society. And I would say, even in his downtime, like, he's still having pretty solid matches with Randy Orton.
But the flame was clearly starting to go out.
Yes.
Yeah, like, you know, it looked like he was going to be another washout, right? I mean, a guy that had potential that they wasted and he was out of the way, out the door. And another guy that was kind of like, oh, you know, he could have maybe been a little something. I don't think anyone really could have expected what came after that at that time. Like, that, I mean, that doesn't take away from it, but I'm just saying, like, that kind of came out of left field.
It's like, unlimited potential at the start, and then, oh, they're never going to go with this guy, so the potential's not going to get fulfilled, and then you're right, they loosen the chains, and then he does end up being that guy. But then they drop the ball on it.
I have a hard time remembering his last couple months. I mean, I don't really blame him for anything in 2014. So, to me, his run really ends with – what was going on in 13? Was it when he was teaming with, like, Brian against the Wyatts and shit?
Yeah, and those matches are fine. They're not great, but that whole year is him in limbo booking-wise.
Right.
Right? But in that year, you get the Undertaker match. You get the Brock match. Mm-hmm. You get the Punk match on Raw. The Punk match. Of course, it's
Cena.
The Punk match.
Yeah.
You get the Cena match on Raw, which is excellent. So, like, I mean, they put him in with Ryback again at the end, and it wasn't great, but he was good in the role, mm-hmm. right? Like, so it's kind of tricky there.
Yeah. No, and I mean, Punk, I think he checks in a bit ahead of Foley. I mean, if you go by the, like, star rating stuff, it's a little bit unfair to Foley because, you know, a lot of time he was with pre good worker Undertaker for like yeah. years of his career. He wasn't in there with elite workers. Like, he wasn't getting 25 minute pay-per-view matches with Daniel Bryan in his prime. You know, I mean, like, he wasn't getting that stuff.
Yeah.
But when he was given the opportunity, I mean, he has, you know, what, 3 5-star matches? Well, it depends. So here are the ones I would put in contention for the, like, 4 3/4 to 5 stars is okay. Shawn at Mind Games.
Yeah.
Triple H at the Rumble.
Yeah.
Austin at Over the Edge, which I think is 5. And then Orton at Backlash.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree with all those. And it's funny because you're like, he's not getting the good workers, but he gets Shawn Michaels.
Right. And he delivered. I mean, when he had the chance, he fucking delivered. He had an awesome match. And I mean, yeah. I don't think you can understate, too, him making Triple H just to put over how good his character was at that point. You know,
well, he didn't just make Triple H. He made The Rock.
Mm-hmm.
He made Triple H. Taker, you think? Made Taker?
Think of where Taker was when that feud started. I'm watching it now. I mean, he's over.
He reinvigorated him, for sure.
He's over. Super over. But, like, he felt like a guy on a fucking treadmill. Like, you know, like, he just kind of go rinse, repeat with the corporation. Then he kind of jumps back up. He's got the title match with Brett that sucks.
Yeah.
Pretty good match with Diesel. And then it's kind of like, all right, where's he going to go now? Diesel's leaving. So, like, he felt like he was on a bit of a treadmill and that he may always just kind of be a special attraction. I don't know if he gets the title reigns and has some of the longevity in the end that he has without that Foley feud.
Yeah, it makes sense. Makes sense. It gives him, like, a little prop up.
Yeah. So I think – all right. So Foley didn't make Taker, but he remade Taker, I would say. So
sure.
He remade Taker. He made Rock, made Orton, made Triple H. I think he made Edge. Edge, you know, he had some help from, like, Shawn as well, but – and Lita, but it wasn't really until the Foley stuff at WrestleMania 22 and then into One Night Stand is where Edge really started to pop big, and then into the Cena stuff in the summer. But
I don't know because, like, he was popping big at the start of the year with the Money in the Bank and the title win. And
yeah, I feel like he was kind of where Triple H was, you know what I mean? Like, kind of you could see him at that level, but is he going to be a sustained main eventer? I feel like Foley made him a sustained main eventer.
I don't know. I feel like the feud with Hardy did. Like, that really cemented him as, like, a top heel.
It's
funny because he was a top heel in real life.
Right.
But, like,
sure.
Yeah. But that's debatable.
I think Foley helped him greatly. I'll put it that way. Foley helped him greatly in that feud.
Yeah.
Both teaming with him and wrestling against him. I mean, that's
yeah. And that's not something that Punk has. He doesn't have that at all.
No.
Like, he doesn't help. I mean, not that he hurts people. But, like,
right.
But that also just wasn't his role in any
right.
In any
Foley was there to be the dummy that put these guys. Honestly, partially he helped Vince get over too.
Foley,
yeah,
yeah, with the comedy and
like late '98 with the dad stuff. Like, it really made Vince even more of a heel, diabolical heel, like screwing Foley over like that. You know,
he's the only guy to ever physically sell a "you're fired."
Yes.
Like a smack in the face.
And just think of his other memorable moments. You know, Yerpal, This Is Your Life. Like, just all that shit is, like, you know.
Yeah.
Big time moments for him. His debut.
Yeah. Yeah, like, it's funny because, like, when I first made my list, I think I forgot Foley. And then I started, like, the way I made my list is I kind of put guys together and then I'd face them against each other. And so I started Foley at number 100. Because that's just – the list was already made, and he
right.
went all the way up.
Yeah.
Like, very quickly.
Yeah. Yeah, he's awesome. I mean, he's a – to me, he's a sneaky guy you don't really think of when you first think of it. Like, even to your credit, you know, you're saying you forgot him altogether. He's a guy that just doesn't pop in your head as a WWF guy like that. And then then you start dissecting it, and it's like he really was a – outside of his look, he was a prototypical WWF guy that could do it all, could talk. Could work, could brawl, could do the main event style, connected with the crowd, had such a connection with the crowd.
Yeah.
And in a way, he's very close to Punk, but I think he's also kind of a early evolutionary version of Daniel Bryan. Kind of the everyman.
In terms of, like, everyman?
Yeah, just the everyman, workers man, underdog, No one is ever going to have a chance. The original B-plus player. I mean, right? Yeah. They don't call him that in 98, but they basically are calling him that, right? I mean, Vince is basically calling him a B-plus player that's never going to be a world champion. And, I mean, we didn't even talk about the match where he wins the title. It's like, I mean, that's an all-time moment. You know, maybe a top 10 company moment. You know what I mean? Like, that's whatever. Yeah. It's up there.
For sure. For sure.
You know, I don't know if Punk has a win. Like, I mean, I don't know. How do you compare Money in the Bank to that?
The Money in the Bank. Might put it even higher. Money in the Bank.
Come on, really?
Because yeah, but you're like, I love that moment where Foley wins the title. It is amazing. But that atmosphere at Money in the Bank with him,
it's the
winning,
same atmosphere.
It's not the same because like it's the same. It's the same level of pop when he wins.
I don't know.
I would argue that the biggest pop is Austin coming out. But it doesn't have the feel that Punk Cena has from the beginning, and it doesn't have as good a story going into it.
All right, so a couple points I'm going to unpack here, slap you in the face with. Austin does get the big pop, but I would argue that they're popping for Austin because he's coming to help Foley win. You know what I mean? Like, they're not popping because Steve Austin's here, I don't think, as much as that he's coming
to
even the sides.
He's returning too, right?
Well, I mean, from like 3 weeks, so it's like he had been gone for 2 years. I mean, that was fucking... I mean... Punk was basically returning in that fucking match from being checked out for 3 months. But the story I think was still really good. I mean, it had been unfolding since like September with Vince screwing Austin out of the belt. Then Foley becomes this handpicked guy, we think. And then he fucks over Foley and Rock turns heel on Foley and wins Survivor Series. Then at Rock Bottom, they fuck Foley again where he should have won and he didn't. And now here's kind of his last shot. They have the great angle on Raw where he forces Shane to give him the match, and DX is in his corner, which is, you know, kind of cool because they're giving him the rub, and then the corporation's all right. It was just like this perfect chaotic atmosphere, and it's hard for me to just compare a pay-per-view match like that to like a Raw main event when you talk about like, I don't know. I think you should watch the whole Rock Foley match. I think the buzz is there the whole match.
I'm not saying it's not there. I'm saying it's not as great. Mm. Like, and I'm not saying I don't love the match because I do, but like in the end, it's a pretty typical wrestling storyline. Like it's babyface gets screwed over, babyface gets his vengeance. Whereas this was something completely different for the company. Like I remember the weeks leading up to it,
the pipe bomb was to go home, wasn't it?
No, because they did the contract signing.
Wasn't that for SummerSlam?
No, they did the contract signing before too, because Vince was trying to get him to re-sign his contract.
I thought the pipe bomb was the week before.
No, it's not. I want to say it's at least 2 weeks, maybe even three.
Where was that? 2011.
I know the
no
Vince
because
contract
Scott. I remember because Scott was on the fucking cruise for the pipe bomb, and then the Money in the Bank was that next week. I thought.
No. It's at least a couple of...
I'm going to pull the DVD off the shelf. Hang on.
Yeah, pull it up.
By that, I mean I'm going to Graham's page.
Oh, the DVD of Money in the Bank? Look, the pipe bomb was June 27th.
Right, the pipe bomb was June 27th. The one was Money in the Bank.
Hold on, I'm looking it up.
July 17th.
Great radio.
July 17th. Oh, God, I always thought it was right before it.
Right, so it's almost 3 weeks, right?
Mm-hmm.
And like in that time, I remember constantly thinking like, what are they going to do? Like, how are they going to get out of this? Like, what booking is this going to be? And it was also coming off a time where Cena never lost, like very rarely ever lost. And so like the anticipation and how different it was and how different a character this guy was. And at the time you really felt like you were on the verge of something truly special with Punk. Because that pipe bomb opened up all kinds
of
things.
Wait, when was the pipe bomb?
June 27th.
Is that right?
So it opened up all these different venues for him. I remember him being on ESPN, and I remember for the very first time in a long time, a genuine excitement about the product. Like it was just so compelling as to what he was doing. Now, I don't know if that's necessarily fair. Like Foley was like in an era where it was compelling all the time, as this kind of stood out. But in the end, though, too, they executed everything perfectly. Like, it's in his hometown, the way they ended it,
pure
the
luck.
Way they... Pardon me?
I said pure luck.
Pure luck. It is luck. But that doesn't matter. Like, the moment still happened. And it was still compelling.
Do you think they would have had as compelling a situation on, like, a taped Raw?
No.
Okay.
I think the tape Raw hurts it, but I don't
know.
No,
see, like, I think it's the opposite. I'm saying I think that strengthens Foley and Rock because they were able to pull that off. It is still.
Oh, yeah. I'm agreeing with you. I was like,
I don't think Punk and Cena could have had that same atmosphere on, like, a taped Raw.
No, probably not. Well, the atmosphere for sure, because the atmosphere is like what's going on in the building, right?
Yeah. Does it feel the same though?
I'm not getting your point.
Yep, exactly.
Great. So moving right along. So that's why
moron.
Hey, don't call me that. It's two times today I've been called a moron.
You're starting to see a fucking trend, you idiot.
Yeah. Hi. I don't know. Like, for me, like, it's again, it's not to shit on the Foley moment. I think it's amazing, but that Cena Money in the Bank match to me is one of the greatest matches in the history of the company, and it's up there in terms of one of the greatest moments too. And it made me a fan again for a lot of ways. Like, I kind of laughed.
So, by the way, I have Punk higher than Foley, right? You remember this, right?
So do I.
But I guess I'm still trying to argue that they're pretty much a dead even heat, right? That it's not like,
oh no, yeah. I have them at 11 and 13. So, like,
who's between them?
Angle.
All right.
And I might have to move him now. Like, the more we talk, the more it seems.
I love Kurt, but I feel like Foley just has more moments and versatility.
Yeah, but Kurt has, like, just excellence.
Yeah.
Like, and his high.
See, I don't know if his highs are better.
I think close.
I think Foley's highs are better than Kurt's highs.
Yeah.
Kurt's more consistent.
Way more consistent.
But Kurt has some downtime too. Like, you know, if you watch some of those periods in like 03, 04, 05, you know what I mean? Like, there's weeks and months at a time where he's not doing much. Like, he's doing the bestiality feud with Booker or the fucking, you know, Team Angle versus the Big Show stuff. Like, he has his little Foley 99 stretches in that run. You know, if you're giving me Angle from his debut through, you know, WrestleMania 19, well, that's, you know, we're talking elite Kurt at that point. That's great. But he does have some down period in those last 3 years that I think factor in a bit.
Yeah, but they're not down the same way Foley's are. Like I don't blame Foley for being booked against Val Venus. You know what I mean? It's not his fault. Like, I know we counted against him, but he was not as good as he usually was against Val Venus. Whereas,
are you just saying in ring or even character promo wise?
I would say,
because I feel like he's still carried a lot just by persona and character in 99. He's like an old pitcher that has lost his fastball in 99 that is just getting by purely on, like, guile. You know what I mean? Like, just, he just knows how to wrestle and he's just going out there and he can do enough to, you know, because even if it's SummerSlam 99, I mean, he's hobbling, he's hurting with that knee, and that's a good match and he's a big part of it. Like, that's.
See, I don't think that's a good match.
No, you don't like that match?
Really different. You know, I don't hate it. I probably have it at about 2.5. You know, like, so, like, it's fine. You know, like, and he's in there with Austin and Triple H. I mean, we've bashed Triple H a lot, but, like, like, he was pretty good at that point, and Austin was all right. You know, it's more that, like, yeah, like, you're right in terms of he was hobbling along and he was carrying himself on his promos, but you could visibly see him in the ring much weaker, being much weaker.
Right.
And, like, then you got the team with Al Snow, which, I mean, like, it's a fine story, but it doesn't amount to anything good in ring. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. And that's not necessarily, like, in the great scope of things in his whole career. That I have 13, so I'm obviously not weighing that very heavily at all, right? But just in direct comparison, like, Kurt, even in his low points, to me is never bad. Like, he never looks off. He's in matches that are less inspired. Like, or in bad storylines, but he still brings it every time. And I'm not saying he every outing's a 4-star match.
So I think somebody even argued that's a detriment, though. That when he's bringing that level to some of those matches, it's almost like too much, like go, you know, kind of stuff.
Yeah, maybe, sure. But I think, like, even, like,
yeah, that 05, like the Masters with Henry are fucking terrible.
Is that 05 or 06?
It is. Yeah, it's Rumble 06, and they fight again, I think, at like Judgment Day.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah, but it's also 2006 Mark Henry. Like, I'm sure people will tell you he's one of the 10 greatest workers in the world, but like, but wasn't exactly having great matches during that period.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, like, if you look at every year, like, Angle's almost got a classic every single year.
Yeah. I mean, I think Foley almost does, too, other than 99.
Yeah. But he's there less.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. If you count his comebacks, it's probably about the same.
Yeah, I guess.
Right?
Yeah.
He's got Shawn in 96, classic. I'm trying to think 97. Does he have one in 97?
No.
98, he's got the Cell and Over the Edge.
Over the Edge. 99, he doesn't. I mean, well, the I Quit, so it's fine.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty iconic moment-wise, I guess.
Yeah, but it's not the same.
2000, he's got the Triple H match.
Yeah.
04, he's got Orton.
And then you got...
06, he's got One Night Stand.
Yeah. Yeah, whereas, like, Angle in 2000, I don't know if he has a classic in 2000. I really like the title match with Rock, but I don't know if I'd call it a classic. And then 2001, he's got a few.
Yeah,
like he's got Austin. He's got the one with Rock at No Way Out, which is awesome. He's got
Benoit in the cage.
The triple threat with RVD.
Yep. Like, I don't know if that's a notch below a classic.
It's close. I love that triple threat, but yeah. And then you get to 2002. What has he got in 2002?
Edge.
Yeah.
Mysterio. Yeah, Mysterio and the tag.
The tag stuff. 2003, he's got Benoit off the top. He's got Brock. I love the Brock Mania match.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got a bunch of good ones with Brock throughout the year.
Yeah.
2004, does he have anything? I don't. Depends Guerrero.
How you feel about Eddie, yeah.
Yeah. But again, I'd put that a notch below myself.
Yeah. 05.
Michaels.
Yep. And then 06, Taker.
Taker. Yeah. And then he's gone, sadly.
Yeah. And this year he has a great Shield match.
Uh-huh. And his strong showing at the Survivor Series, where Michael Cole kept saying, he's just as good as he's ever been.
You know, it's funny. I was going through doing some logging work and going through old PTB episodes, and I came across King of the Ring 01, and I was kind of buzzing through, and I caught me talking about Kurt and Shane, and I mean, you could have transported the conversation to last week. I'm like going on and on about Shane hanging with Kurt and how it's not believable and all this stuff, and then go right back to last week and we have fucking Shane McMahon hanging around in the ankle lock for 2.5 minutes in the fucking Survivor Series match.
Fucking Shane. Like, what's the point of that submission hold?
Yeah.
If it doesn't make you tap out.
Right.
And why doesn't Kurt just break his ankle?
Yeah.
Whatever. It's not the product's not for me anymore. Let's just leave it at that.
All right, so we got to make some decisions. We haven't even talked about Brett.
We haven't even talked about Brett, which means he should be at the back.
Well, we're just trying to get rid of the chum and then moving on to the King.
Yeah.
So let's see how long we go with Brett, and then we can decide if we want to do this other triple threat or save it for next time. Because I have a feeling we may go a little bit long on this. So Brett, I have I'll peel the curtain back a little bit, show my junk. I got Brett at 9.
Ooh. I have him at 14.
Okay.
Which I think is very respectable.
Mm-hmm.
Considering how I feel about Bret Hart.
Okay.
As a Canadian.
Yeah. Treason.
shh. I don't want them coming and breaking down my door. Okay, so Bret, I mean, okay, why is he so high for you?
He's so high. He is. Who's saying that?
It feels like it should be a band called Train or something like that.
Yeah, right. I think it was Ty Backman or something.
Early 2000s.
Yeah, definitely. It was definitely like 01. I gotta look it up now. Hang on.
It'll be on the same album as Drops of Jupiter. Yeah, it's just back in the atmosphere. Yeah.
It is Ty Backman. Let's see. This says when we're definitely going to play it to end the show. I'll try and find out when you're talking in a minute.
high above me. Right?
Yep. Oh, God.
What a terrible era for music that was.
What, like 2001? Oh, it's good. It's great for like fucking wicked over the top like rap and hip hop. It's great. O1, yeah. like Ja Rule and all that fucking shit. Eve. Like, it's great for all that stuff. But like for this, like, it's a rough stretch for like this kind of music, like rock, I guess.
And it leads directly into Evanescence.
Yes.
the spiritual successor to all this.
Basically every Raw theme from like 02 on is the spiritual successor. Came out in 99.
Aww. I can't believe we were so far with that.
She's so high. Alright, Bret Hart, why do I like him? He's great. He is a brilliant in-ring storyteller. Every match of his has some level of impressive psychology behind it. Every move feels like it matters. The connection with the crowd for a guy that couldn't talk great, I thought was special. He was part of one of the most memorable tag teams of the 80s. He was the best worker of that tag team. Has done it as a heel and a face. And I think he did what not many people could do in the way he evolved his character from 96 to 97 and adapted, and the way he went from hero to all of a sudden a guy that's realizing the whole world around him has changed and nobody cares about him as much anymore. And all of a sudden everyone likes strippers and abusers better than him. And he leaves out of anger, comes back hoping things have gotten better and they've gotten worse. And he gets portrayed as this baby. And instead of just becoming a crybaby, he says, fuck you. I haven't changed. I'm still me. You've changed. You are the assholes. I'm still the paragon of virtue, the hitman. Best as there will be. And guess what, America? It's only you that's changed. The whole rest of the world still reveres me because they know how great I am. And they're not into perverts and drunks and swearers and flanderers. They just want to see, which ironically he was all of those things, but he,
yeah, right.
You know, they just want to see Bret Hart. And he completely remade his character while not really changing his character per se. But what he did was start to do shit that he felt was now justified in his heel actions, which is a big part of his 97 run. So in his mind, like, the best character turns are the ones where the guy can believe, right? So Bret Hart can believe he is 100% right throughout all of 1997, right down to getting screwed in Montreal. But, you know, suddenly he's a guy that is taking shortcuts to get the means to the ends because he feels that he has the right to do it because America stabbed him in the back. So he can take these shots at Americans because they've turned on him. He can hurt their heroes because they've turned on him. He can do what he wants to them because they turned his back on him. And he's just getting revenge and he's standing up for all that's right in the world outside of America. And it's such a unique, I mean, you talk about Punk Cena, like how unique that atmosphere was. That was all of fucking 1997. Like, that atmosphere was everywhere for Bret Hart versus America for like 6 months in 1997. I mean, that was, you talk about a time that got you back into wrestling as a fan. Like, that ignited so much excitement and making Raw feel alive again. That whole feud from when he hugs Bret, when he hugs Owen and Davey, to, is kind of like the first, actually the first salvo is in the cage, right, when he swears and throws that no good son of a bitch just hit Pat Patterson, goddamn bullshit. Like, so I mean, so that's kind of like the, like, oh god, something's happening. Then he hugs Bret and Owen, I mean Owen and Davey after WrestleMania, and then the ignition turns the night after Revenge of the Taker. Like, that is when we rev up to like 100 miles an hour with that street fight where him and Austin just beat the shit out of each other on Raw for like whatever. And Austin keeps him the sharpshooter for all that time, and Bret's knee gets fucked up and things just go into hyperdrive. From that point until, you know, Shawn becomes kind of the guy pushed ahead of him, it's just like this epic. It's like Money in the Bank 2011 for like 4 months. Like, I mean, that's all it was. And the heat, all those Raws in Canada are like next level. I mean, the crowd is just fucking insane. And I will put the Canadian Stampede main event atmosphere up against the Money in the Bank 11 atmosphere. and say that Brett was the main catalyst in all of that. Austin was too, but without Brett rallying the Canadian crowd into a frenzy, that doesn't exist.
Okay.
And it wasn't Owen, it wasn't Davey, it wasn't Neidhart, it wasn't Pillman. It was Brett that steered that whole drink in 97. And he has a lot of great matches. So on top of it, you know what I mean? whether it's 1-2-3 Kid on Raw, whether it's with Owen at WrestleMania, Backlund at Survivor Series, a completely different kind of match. That was great. Fucking carrying Diesel to like three great matches.
Two great matches.
King of the Ring. What two do you think?
King of the Ring and Survivor Series.
You don't like Rumble 95?
No, it's fine, but it's not great.
Okay, I'm at four on that, so it's borderline great for me. Yeah. And then King of the Ring is great, and Survivor Series is like an all-time classic. I mean, he's carrying Diesel to those matches. You know, Sean, Survivor Series 92. What am I missing? Davey, both of them. Great matches. You know, mileage may vary on the Iron Man.
Right.
What else? Austin, 13, Survivor Series 96. Revenge of the Taker, all great. Brett's, I mean, Taker, he's the one guy, but even, you know, One Night Only is great. SummerSlam's a lot of fun.
I would argue SummerSlam. I really love that SummerSlam.
Yeah, so you got those. I mean, there's so many. He's just got so many great, like, even little stuff. Like, his brief run-in with DiBiase at 90 Survivor Series is great.
Oh, that's fun, yeah.
Savage, they have the really fun match on Saturday's Main Event, and then their little ditty at Survivor Series 89. Demolition at SummerSlam 90.
I like the Backlund match at Survivor Series 94.
Yeah, that's what I mentioned. It's like so different.
Oh, you did mention, sorry.
Yeah, idiot. Pay attention. sorry, moron. It's such a different match. It's so well executed. Excellently executed. Even, I forget if I talked about it on this show. I feel like maybe last time I had just watched it. A great moment that I had completely forgotten about. Him and Jerry Lawler on this Raw right before King of the Ring 95, where Brett snaps about Lawler beating him at In Your House and just comes out and beats the shit out of Lawler. And this is like punishing him at ringside till he is demanding a rematch. Great moments. SummerSlam 93 with King and Doink. Rumble 93 with Razor. A really good match. King of the Ring 93, Mr. Perfect. SummerSlam 91, Mr. Perfect. Like, just the catalog of great matches just ranges so many years across. So that's probably in a nutshell right there.
Yeah. We'll agree to disagree on some of those matches being great or borderline or whatever. Mm-hmm. So here's my thing with Brett is that I think he's great. I think he's a fantastic worker. I think you're right. He has the great matches. I find that there are too many matches though that I watch that descend into boredom for me.
Okay.
Like, and sometimes it's what you're talking about in terms of him, everything making sense, and in terms of, you're right, he's doing everything right, but I feel too often he's not an exciting worker.
Hmm.
Not that everyone has to be, but to his detriment at times.
See, I think those matches just build to excitement. You know what I mean? He builds it so well.
There's some that do and some that don't. Like his match with the Undertaker at Royal Rumble 96 is terrible. Like,
he's so fucking checked out. I mean, he is just like, I mean, he needed a break. He was burnt. I mean, to me, that's like Punk in early 11. You know what I mean? Where it's just like,
but Punk in early 11 isn't doing 30-minute matches that are dull as shit.
He's not being given the opportunity to do 30-minute matches.
That but that's true. But that being said, like, it's still the output still isn't there. I would say his cage match with Diesel at the pay-per-view is just as bad too.
Mm.
Like, both of those are just awful. And I was just watching the Survivor Series 93 match with Michaels and the Knights the other night, and that's terrible too. So like it's not that he doesn't have the huge output, because he does, obviously. But I find a lot of those matches, we could probably go and find just as many good or great matches from Punk or from Foley. Like, I don't like when you, some of the matches you were naming for me, like, I mean, like Ramon at Royal Rumble 93, which I like, I think it's really good. Like, I just watched it. I have it at about 3 3/4, you know, which is good. It's really good. But I mean, you could cherry pick any one of the Daniel Bryan matches with Punk and you're going to get that, you know, like, and I mean, the flip side of that is Punk had a lot more opportunities against a guy like Bryan than say Bret had against the top
A ton more. I mean, Brett wasn't.
Yeah.
It wasn't until his last year that Raw was a show where you'd have matches every week. You know what I mean? Like Punk. Yeah. Punk had opportunities. I mean, when did Brett get a match with a guy like a Cena on a Raw and give a half? I mean, like, he just wasn't getting that. Like, Kid is like his biggest one.
Yeah.
You know, he Fatu. Like, those are the fucking Virgil. Like, those are the TV matches he was getting. You know, it's a hard comparison. So to me, like, opportunity plays a role in that. Now, I'm not, you know, Punk took advantage of that opportunity and had a lot of great matches. Yeah. But it's easier to remember Brett's matches than it is Punk's, right? I mean, can you tell me all the Raw matches CM Punk had in, like, 09? Like, think of some of those matches, like, even on ECW TV or Raw in 08. I mean, he did not. There was some stuff in there that was not great. I mean, you know, those matches with JBL, like, he had a couple of those. Like, maybe one was good, but one was fucking dog shit.
Yeah.
The Taker matches in, was it 10? I mean, I'd rival that with Brett's Rumble 96.
I wouldn't go that far, but
it's not far off.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they're not as boring and tedious, but
right.
But they're not great either. So yeah, there are some downs. There are some downs as well.
I just think you don't remember because there's so fucking many matches. Like, if you started looking at Raw by Raw for Punk, you'd probably find just as many of those matches as you've named for Brett that are, you know, maybe in the 2.5 range or whatever. My one ding against Brett, like a big one, is the Backlund match at 11. But again, that was circumstance partially. But
Piper
ruining it. Huh? Yeah, Piper was fucking terrible. I just think it was too little too late for that feud. I think no one really wanted to see it anymore. Backlund was kind of done.
It should have been, if anything, he should have just fought Owen again.
Right. Well, the match they had on Action Zone, like right before that, where they did like the no holds barred, this is it. Like, that should have been 11. Like, Owen's final match with Brett, basically.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, I don't know. Like, you're right. Like, I look at the opportunity thing as different. Like, you're right. Punk had a lot more opportunities to have classic matches, say, on Raw or whatnot. But in the end, the matches are still there.
Well, like, what I'm saying is, though, he also had probably a lot more dogs you're not remembering because there's so much volume.
It's possible. It is possible.
No, it's definite. I don't think it's possible. Yeah, there's no way.
You prove it then. You prove it.
Okay, let me
then.
Pull up Graham right now. I'm going to read you these fucking. Here's 2011 Raw. Let's find Punk. And I want you to tell me.
Oh, I'm not going to remember them.
Right, that's my point, right? So, I mean, but I feel like Bret Hart's Raw matches, if I were to tell you, you'd probably remember most of them.
Because he has four of them.
Exactly, that's my point. So, like, Punk had a lot of opportunity, but guess what? He had a lot of fucking matches, too, that just weren't, you know, probably weren't what you remember them to be. Okay, here we go. CM Punk defeats Mark Henry on January 7th from Augusta with the new
Five
Nexus.
Stars.
Okay.
Five stars.
Fights him the next... Wait, is this fucking Raw? What is this shit? I don't want.
You can't even get it straight. You're trying, like, you're coming at me with non-facts.
This is the house show. Hang on, fake news. I know. Hang on.
Fake
let me
news.
Pull up. We're gonna do it. We're gonna prove Punk is no good, guys. All right, here we go. Punk. Is this Raw now? How is this possible? 486. He's on a million fucking times talking.
I don't know how you're gonna prove it. You told me the match. I told you the star rating.
What, five stars?
Yeah, I win.
All right, hang on. All right, keep talking. Tell me what
Mark Henry. I mean, look, Mark Henry is such a great worker.
Yeah,
that for sure. That match was like top notch.
All right, Edge Punk 4 minutes. This is early 08.
Yes, he's, but here, look,
Punk
four
Carlito
minutes, okay?
5 minutes. I'm just saying, he had a lot of matches that you're making it like every match CM Punk ever had is fucking great because
that's not what I said.
That's
at all.
Basically what you said because you're saying Bret Hart, you're picking out his crap, and you're like, I can find any Punk match that matches those matches, but like
any Punk match with Bryan is exactly what I said.
Yeah, well, Daniel Bryan's like a fucking top 12 guy. Like, yeah, okay. Every Bret Hart match with fucking Steve Austin is great too. I don't know.
Top 12 is a bit much. I would disagree.
Daniel Bryan's 12 on my list.
No, he's not top 12 on my list, and that's the list we're using. He's 18.
Okay, sorry. So he's one of the top 18 worker of all time.
Yeah, see, doesn't that feel better to tell the truth?
Aren't Bret's matches best matches with guys further down the list than Punk's?
No. What's Brett's best match is against Austin. He's higher up than Punk.
Okay, so go down to the next level of depth. You got Bulldog, Perfect, right? Those are his next group.
Yeah, but that's Owen. Not – I mean, that's they're not much further down below Punk's other matches. Like, look,
who, Brian, for instance, Taker, Punk's best high, Cena's
against,
high.
Punk's best match against Cena. Okay. Austin is better than Cena. I have Austin ahead of Cena, so Punk wins.
By how many spots?
Pardon?
By how many spots?
I have Austin at pulling the curtain back. I have Austin at 3 and Cena at 7. No, 8.
Oh, so
8.
You have Cena criminally low.
Low? It's 8.
Criminally,
I'm going to put him at 9. I'm putting him at 9 just out of spite because I build my list on spite.
Criminally low.
Yeah. Criminally. Now we have to talk about him later.
Oh, you're such a moron. All right. So I don't think we're going to – I think we've laid out everything.
Well, hold on. We got to actually put them in order, though. Like, so you really think Brett is that much above these two?
I mean, I have him the same amount of spots you have Austin over Cena, so it's not that much. I mean, it's
– criminally, it's criminal.
I have 3 guys between Brett and Punk. And I told you who they were. Bob Backlund, Brock Lesnar, and Daniel Bryan.
Brett Hart ahead of Bob Backlund feels wrong. Like, Bob Backlund carried that company for 6 years.
Yeah, so?
So, Brett Hart, and through pretty decent years. Like, Brett Hart, like,
I didn't realize we were crunching numbers now. I thought we weren't doing that, Meltzer.
You know what? I'm just making it up. I actually don't know. But
I'm sure Backlund's had really good stuff, but I'll go throw on some Titans of Wrestling and find you some fucking terrible Bob Backlund MSG matches.
Sure. Yeah. But for me, Bob Backlund actually fits in the next tier. Like, he belongs in the tier of tippy-top guys for me.
Well, I have Brett in that tier.
Yeah, well, he doesn't belong there. That's the problem. Like, he was on top for, like, what was he on top for? 2 years? And
no, 5.
He wasn't on top for 5.
He was pretty much the main event guy for those years. Don't give me that. Go watch anything in from late 92 until he leaves in late 97.
He's not I don't think he's the main guy in 93. Like, he's up there. He's up. Like,
oh,
but
he's definitely the guy. He's the guy.
He's not the guy.
Who is?
The guy.
You're telling me Lex Luger? Lex Luger barely was on fucking TV. He was riding around the bus the whole time.
Lex Luger is definitely ahead of him in the company's view of who the top guy is.
Go watch Raw in 1993 and you tell me who was the
top guy. I just watched all the pay-per-views in 1993, okay? I know fucking 93, okay?
All right, so Bret Hart, main events the Rumble.
Yeah.
Main events WrestleMania.
Yeah.
Main events King of Ring.
Yeah.
So 3 out of the 5 pay-per-views he main evented.
Yeah.
On Raw, he's way more active than Lex Luger, which is the main show. Superstars, he's more active than Lex Luger.
The whole company's built around Lex Luger in mid-93.
Luger's riding around on the bus. And it was the whole...
But
okay.
The company's built
around
him.
No, no. The company's built around Luger from July 4th until SummerSlam.
And going forward...
And like, him and Brett are pretty even from there out.
Nah, I don't know about that.
Because Luger's in the mix with fucking Ludwig.
Yeah, but he's still in the... He's still in the
okay, so isn't
the
company around Brett for the first 6 months?
Yeah, so it's equal.
It's not equal because I don't think Luger's...
6 months is six... The year's only 6 months long.
Because I think Brett actually has those last couple of months with Luger. Brett wins Superstar of the Year, not Luger.
Yeah, but that's a fan vote and fans don't know anything. They never fake those. So,
either way, you're wrong because either the fans voted for him and he's better or the company made him picked him.
Fine. I'll give you 93.
Okay.
So 93, 94. 94. Not 95.
No, you don't think he's still positioned?
As the top guy? No, not in 95.
Mm-hmm. Watch those shows. They're trying with Diesel, but Brett's still getting pretty top billing.
They're not building the company around him. They're trying to push him towards the back.
So 96?
96? Not really.
When he's around, he is.
I don't even know. By his own admission, he was being put to the back burner in favor of Shawn Michaels.
He's still the world champion for the first 3 months, and then he comes back in him and Austin's like the focal point feud.
Well, Yokozuna is the world champion for almost all of 93, but he wasn't even in the conversation we just had.
Yeah, but Brett was champion for those first 3 months.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, Michaels was champion for like 6 months. How long?
Yeah, Brett wasn't there. It's not his fault.
And he was still champion when Brett came back.
And then 97, he is champ for the whole year. Top guy for the whole year.
That's absolutely not true. But
top guy for the whole year.
I don't know.
Him and Austin.
Him and Austin.
Yeah.
Like 78 to like 83 is all Backlund. I mean, there's other guys.
Fucking style though. If Brett, You could plug Bret Hart in those 6 years and you probably get similar output is my point.
I would say you might even get better output if you put him in those 6 years. Yeah.
It's just a different style.
Yeah, but we didn't have that. We had Backlund carrying the company, which is what puts him in the team. And Bret Hart, like, as much – look, I like him. But he doesn't feel like a guy you build the company around.
Like I don't know. I think if you go back and you look at, like, 94 Bret Hart, I think you could. They just never really gave him the push. And when they finally did, he was a star in fucking 97.
Yeah, he's a star as a heel in 97.
And he's a star as a face in 94. So it was.
I'm not saying he's not a star.
I don't think anybody is carrying that company in 94.
No, but what I'm saying is I have no problem putting Hogan, Austin, Bruno, Backlund in the same conversation. Like these are mega stars that like carried the company. I have issue putting Bret in there because I don't feel he reached the same level as they did.
I just don't think Backlund carried. He had the belt for 6 years. I don't know if he carried the company.
Who carried it during that period?
No fucking no. I don't think it was him.
It just was floating. No one was carrying it.
I mean, you'll hear how many people have said like these guys, like the Titans guys, who have examined that era in great detail, have said it's like one of the worst stretches in company history.
Right.
I mean, it's just like a dearth of nothing in the late '70s. You know what I mean? Like it's fucking awful. You know.
Yeah, but you go back and watch that footage, and the crowd is just rabid for Backlund.
They're rabid for Bret.
Sure, sure.
All right.
Look, Backlund ahead of Bret.
I mean, I have them back to back.
So it's not going to be hard for you to just switch them.
Yeah, well, it is because Bret's got better matches.
Yeah, Bret probably does have better matches. I would agree with that.
And I think he's for a better talker. Amazingly enough. Heel Backlund.
Yeah, heel Backlund's probably better, but I don't even know. I don't even know if heel Backlund's interesting, but he rambles a lot too.
Yeah.
I guess we just have a philosophical view on like what like
yeah,
for
philosophically
me
wrong. Yep. You're gonna recognize
the
best there is, the best there was, the best there ever will be.
My loving brother Owen. All right. So who else is ahead of in between Bret and Punk?
Brock and Brian.
I see Brian. I'm fine with Bang Back. Brock, I have ahead of all of these guys. So
Brian. I went back. He's one of those guys that I could have had anywhere from like where he is at 12 to 20. I just think you talk about like Punk being a guy that could have built the company around. Like Brian, you just is such a what if. Like, if he doesn't get hurt after 14 and they actually commit to him, like, what he could have been. I mean, how many people since Rock, I mean, Cena never even really did it, captivated the world like Brian did in that stretch. I mean, like, I go to Providence basketball games that still play the yes thing on the case. I mean, like that was such a thing at that point. And, I mean, he reinvigorated that. Those first couple months of 14 and that atmosphere around 30, I mean, that is all him. You know what I mean? Like, maybe a little bit Shield sprinkled in, but it's pretty much all Daniel Bryan building that atmosphere to that show. And it's an iconic show and iconic moments. And how many guys have had arguably, you know, nearly 2 5-star matches in one night on a pay-per-view like that, right? I mean, him and Triple H, do you agree is 5?
Yes, I don't agree. The triple threat for me is under 4.
Okay, close though.
But it's close to 4.
Aggregate star rating, how many guys have had 2 matches like that?
Yeah.
Bret?
No one. I wouldn't even say that.
King of the Ring 93?
I got the perfect match at 4.25.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. And the other one,
Bigelow?
The final, I think, at 3.75. So I guess it's close.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But not the same zeitgeist that Brian had. So my whole point is I think Brian has such a unique charisma and crowd connection. That you have to warrant him high. I mean, he's a guy that injury, you know, we've talked about before, like kind of what if guys like Brian to me, if you give him another year in that exact spot on the card, he might be like in the top 7 or 8, you know what I mean? But he criminally just tragically got cut short before he could really,
I mean, he's hurt a little by the fact that like a lot of his earlier stuff was a bit meandering.
Yeah. But even those matches that are in there are like
good.
Yeah, like the Wade Barrett one, you know, like out of nowhere, it was like really good.
Yeah,
the
but
mid,
you know, if you go week to week, Raw to Raw, you're going to find some dogs.
Not with him as much. I think Punk had more than Brian. I mean, there were nights where, remember, like, they had him out there, which is fucking stupid as hell. They had him out there doing double duty on how many of those Raws where he'd go out there and wrestle two matches a night on those Raws that were, you know, all pretty good. Even 15 with his neck just hanging on by a thread, goes out there with Reigns at Fastlane and has a great match, you know? Yeah, so, I mean, Kane made Kane fucking likable in 2012, you know what I mean? Like that, the Team Hell No shit, 12 into 13. The Punk feud is really good. Those matches are great. So, I mean, yeah, he's got a lot of high-level stuff. It's a short run, but he's such to me, he's like a cultural guy. Just the way he connected with the crowd was, like, unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, I have him at 18, so I'm not really arguing too much on him. Like, I just think he gets dinged a bit for his longevity, but that's about it.
Like, I put him, he's almost, to me, like, I think it's fitting that it goes him, Punk, Foley on my list because I feel like he's a combo of the two.
Yeah, maybe.
I feel like he's got Punk's in-ring and Foley's like crowd connection and kind of folksy personality.
Yeah, I just have trouble putting him ahead of guys like Undertaker, who has a lot of crap, but like maybe the most iconic character of all time, you know, and a ton of top end matches too, yeah. Right? Or even a guy like Jericho. Like I couldn't put him ahead of Jericho. Like even though Jericho doesn't have the super high end match that like say
or that Bryan moment, has. All those moments. Like I don't think he has those moments. Jericho's an interesting guy. He's a compiler to me. Like
yeah.
He's got a long run, a lot of good stuff. I feel like what he's lacking are those like just those big moments that we talk about. Where I think
he's the best of the compilers, I find.
Yeah, I mean, I got him 16th, so that's pretty much to me is, yeah.
I have a 16 too.
Look at that. Yeah, he is absolutely the best of the compilers. But Brian, I mean, his top moments are what, 30 both times? The cage, right, when he turns on Wyatt.
Beating Cena.
Yep, beating Cena. There's probably one other one in there somewhere. The Cena match. I always forget about the Cena match. It's so good.
Yeah. And that's probably
his return
match.
To SummerSlam 10.
Yeah, yeah.
Choking Justin Roberts. It's a very memorable moment.
Getting eliminated at the 2015 Royal Rumble.
14. 15, you're right. 14 wasn't even in. That's another great match, too. For, you know, I think his match with Bray Wyatt looks even better in retrospect, given what Bray has done since then. At the time, I think Bray got a lot of credit for that match, but looking back in time...
Bray deserves no credit for that match.
Well, now he doesn't, yeah. I mean, look at what he's done since. Outside of the Shield stuff, he has nothing even close to that. You know, that's like a 4-star fucking match. It's a straight match. So, I mean, Brian gets a shitload of credit for that, too.
Yeah, I'd give him all that. Jericho, look, if you look at the categories, right? And this is probably how we should end this triple threat match.
Yeah,
like,
probably end the show.
We should end the show. We should take the categories, right? So, like, if we look at nuance, mm-hmm. right? Who wins that category? Brett, Foley, or Punk?
Oh, I thought we were doing Brian of Jericho.
Oh, we can do Brian Jericho. Well,
let's do Brett, Foley, and Punk.
Yeah. Look, maybe that'll be one of our next ones. We'll do I have Brian, Mysterio, Jericho right around the same place. How do you, are they anywhere near you?
I got Brian 12, Jericho a few after that, and then who was the last one?
I had Mysterio.
Yeah, he's a few after that.
Yeah, that might be an interesting one. Anyway. Okay. So let's do the categories. So if we're looking at Punk and nuance, Punk, Foley, Brett, where do you think that shakes out?
Hang on. Let me pull this, cheat sheet up again. I want to remember exactly what we're looking at for nuance. It's been a while, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know.
Okay. Longevity, flexibility, and tangibles. So, longevity, I'd probably go Brett, Punk, Foley in that order. Flexibility, I'd probably go Foley, Brett, Punk, I think, for flexibility.
You put Brett ahead of Punk for flexibility?
Yeah, Brett worked great as a heel, face, tag, single.
So did Punk. And I would say his work is...
What's Punk's tag stuff?
Well, he doesn't have a long run, but he's got a tag run with Kane. He's got a tag run with Kofi. I know it's not as iconic as the Hart Foundation.
Or Brett and Owen.
Yeah, Brett and Owen was short, though. But yes.
Great. They had two great matches within like a month.
Yeah, but they're fighting the Quebecers, and everybody from Quebec is amazing.
And also the Signers, which was a great match.
Yeah, people from Michigan are hit and miss.
Very miss. Intangibles, I think I'd go Foley, Punk, Brett in that one.
Hmm.
To me, Foley's got his intangible. Just like when you look at that lump of an ugly man, like yeah. Just think of how hard he had to work and the natural charisma he had to have to overcome that and become a top guy in the WWF. Like he imagine what he brought to the table for Vince McMahon to look at that lump of shit and say, like, this guy is like world champion material. I mean, Punk and Bret at least have the look.
Yeah. Like, did you say you put Punk behind Foley for longevity too?
No, I said Bret, Punk, Foley.
Okay, cool. Yeah. What about influence?
I don't see that on the list.
Pardon me? You don't see that on the list?
I don't see influence on the list.
Because, I mean, their entire hiring policy kind of shifted around the time CM Punk came up.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter to you? You don't care about the company as a whole? Oh, no, you don't. You don't care about the company as a whole.
I've made that clear. No, I think Foley for influence, because you think of probably all the generation of fat men that came after him that thought they could actually do this.
So Punk got us Daniel Bryan. Foley got us Bull Dempsey.
Bubba Ray Dudley.
Bubba Ray Dudley.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Yeah, I think Foley and Punk are close in influence. I think Foley's influence was different. I think he influenced the idea that you didn't need to be a bodybuilder or a guy, you know, a sexy boy.
but did that actually change?
Who are the
top guys that are like Foley?
All right, so did it change for Punk?
Well, yeah, because I mean, if you look at who all their top guys are now, or almost all of them,
is that
they all
come from.
Pardon me?
Is that attrition? Did Punk really change that, or is it just attrition? Like, the other guys that were big-name stars all are breaking down, and they didn't build up a militia of other guys, and this is all they have are guys. Like, it's almost like WCW stealing WWF guys, right? They're just stealing guys from the indies and putting them on top because they don't have anyone else.
I don't know about that, because you're not seeing guys like Brian Cage, like, come in, and which is, like, their exact prototype from, like, say, the 80s. Like, there are bigger, good-looking guys.
Yeah, but we're way into that era now. I'm talking like, you know, so you're saying now we're still feeling Punk's influence? Like, it's just happening now?
I'm not saying it's just happening now. I think it's been happening for a while. Now, it might not necessarily all be him. You might also attribute the NXT factor to that.
Right. But there's no way of knowing. Rise to power probably helped with that too.
Yeah, but you never know. You don't know, right? But ever since they took a chance on him and built a year around him, a lot more indie guys have come in and been given the ball.
Yeah, but I think he almost was a detriment because of the way things ended with them, I think is a big part of what became the adversarial relationship with those guys.
You feel that it's Punk's departure that started that?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know.
I think they
were already feeling that, but the fans were already turning that way.
From 2011 on, I think Vince made it in his mind. I think he liked CM Punk a lot. I think he thought he was a good wrestler and all that stuff, but I think deep down he probably resented the way Punk kind of held him over the barrel a bit. And I think Triple H certainly resented it. And I think, you know, they reluctantly went with Punk for a while. And I think Punk's last year, he was pretty vocal. You know, it wasn't just 2014. And I think a lot of that stuff started in late 13 with the authority and all that shit. So, and I think by then Punk was already getting grousey with his role in the company by 13. So, yeah, I think he played a pretty big role in the company giving the FU to, like, indie favorite darlings. And then they kind of got their hand forced by Brian being so over. But even then, they went right back when Brian got hurt. You know, they went right back away from it.
But they also built a whole year around Seth Rollins, better or worse.
Yeah, but I don't see him as an indie guy.
But he absolutely is.
No.
Like, he absolutely was.
I think he was an NXT guy. I mean, he came up, he won the NXT title, he got completely repackaged. I know he was ROH champion, but it wasn't during a time where, like, ROH, he wasn't, like, a super indie beloved guy. Like, no one was fucking clamoring for Tyler Black to come up to WWF. He's not in the same category as Punk. And I mean, they looked at him as, like, the Shield. I mean, he was a completely rebooked WWF gimmick. He didn't just come in as Tyler Black, Ring of Honor superstar like Brian or Punk did.
No, that's true. But still, like, I question, like, you know, all these guys, like him, like even Dean Ambrose, like, would these guys have even been given a look if Punk hadn't kind of broken that mold a little more? Because they're all smaller guys, like Neville. Mm-hmm. They're all smaller athletic guys as opposed to their traditional John Cena.
I just think a lot of it is attrition. I think it's just the way wrestling and life has gone. Like, steroids became much bigger. You know, like, just all this stuff, like HGH and everything else is just, I think, as they've risen in awareness and the steroid trial, and just all this shit compounding, I think they had to get away from it. I just think guys just aren't doing that shit anymore as much. You know what I mean? Like, sure, Brian Cage, okay. But beyond that,
yeah.
You know, a lot of these guys just don't exist out there. Like, there aren't these big muscle-up guys. And the ones that they do have, like, a Reigns is a big fucking, like, he's fucking Vince's guy, apple of his eye. You know what I mean? That's who it is.
Yeah.
And they brought Brock back. Brock's a fucking mammoth. You know what I mean? So it's like, I don't think it's his preference to push those guys. I think they'll do it because that's just the way the sport has evolved. But I don't think – and I'm not – again, I do think Punk played a role.
Yeah.
But I don't think ushered in a whole generation of, like, brand new – I mean, you could argue Kurt and Brock kind of did it in 2003, right? And then they went right back away from it then too.
Yeah.
Of, like, these athletic, mat-based guys.
I just don't know if I agree they've gone away from it. Like, I don't think we get Daniel Bryan in that position without CM Punk.
Maybe.
I don't even know if we get Daniel Bryan hired without CM Punk.
Yeah, maybe. When were they both hired, you know?
I believe Bryan was either late 2009 or early 2010, and Punk was in 2005.
Yeah.
So it was even before, like, he blew up.
Well, don't forget, actually, Bryan was in WWE in 02.
Yeah, but fuck you.
Just saying, he was there. He was on the radar. He was
saying,
a Sean guy.
You,
he was a Sean guy.
You call me a moron all night. You bring up these facetious points.
He was a Sean guy. He was a fucking Sean disciple. Of course he was on the radar.
Yeah, him and Spanky. Of course he was going to get hired.
Yeah, well, they both
Garrison
did, right?
Cade.
Multiple times.
That's who they wanted from the Sean Academy was Lance Garrison Cade.
Yes. But CM Punk changed the whole tune. As soon as he came in, they fired every muscle-bound guy and just went all indie. All little guy.
Because that's
what
I
took over the company.
Because that was my point. I'm glad you picked up on it.
Punk showed up on Raw, and all of a sudden it was a fucking indie paradise. And that's it.
John Cena was sodomized in the ring.
Kane
was
gone. Kane is gone. He wasn't eliminating all these guys from Rumble 6 years later.
No, he was gone right away.
Right? Big Show wasn't brought in to siphon off Daniel Bryan's heat.
That's why Hulk Hogan isn't there. They don't even talk about him anymore.
He's too small.
Because CM Punk changed the business. We want to forget the steroid era.
Yeah, he's not small enough.
That's why it took until 2014-15 for the Savage to get in the Hall of Fame. CM Punk
opened the door with that big elbow and stars in his tights. And they're like, oh, yeah, God, Randy Savage, that's right.
We forgot about him. Let's wait 4 years.
Quick, plant that tape with Hulk Hogan calling that guy the N-word. Get him out of here.
Yeah, that was planted.
I mean, Punk definitely ushered in the era when they brought Batista back and paid him millions to destroy Daniel Bryan and be the guy, handpicked guy in 2014.
Yep. Yep, yep, yep. Yep. Also, CM Punk crucified Jesus Christ.
He wants you to believe it.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, do you still want to go through these other stuff? Jump Up Factor, I think we've pretty much covered.
Yeah, I think they're all actually really close.
Yeah.
Jump Up Factor. Like, I mean, for Jump Up, I would probably go...
I think Foley.
Nah, I don't know. Maybe Foley.
I think his peak matches are... Like, I think Brett's got a lot of 5 stars, or whatever, 4 to 5, but I think Foley's are all more memorable, probably.
Yeah. Probably.
Yeah, maybe I'll switch Foley and Brett. I'm, like, talking myself into Foley being, like, a top 5 guy at this point.
Yeah. See, I don't know. Like, I'd have Punk ahead of the nuance of all of them, but not by much.
Sure, Jump you up, justify I, your I, shitty list.
Yeah, yeah. So then on the Jump Up, fuck this. Jump Up, I have Sid ahead of everyone. Yeah.
Shut up!
Yeah, you fat, bald-headed little oaf.
Remember when Chad shit on Sid? Said he's worse than Yokozuna.
What the fuck is wrong with that guy?
It's a southern fucking brain. It's wired wrong.
Did he not watch the press conference where Hulk Hogan was named the number one contender?
This is bogus!
Dude, the best part about that is he's got a piece of paper in front of him, and no one else has a piece of paper. You know what that paper is, right?
Yep.
It's his acceptance speech.
It sure is.
And he never was gets convinced. To say.
I just hurt my hand pretty bad banging on the table. Promo and character work. We've talked about Foley and Punk pretty much dead even there.
And Brett substantially behind for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Foley character work, then Brett, then Punk.
Yeah. Foley character work, then Brett, then Punk? No, yeah. Thank you.
You just agreed to it. You said yeah.
No, I wasn't listening. My wife came in the room.
Tell her I said hi.
She's gone.
Jeez, that was quick. Like apparition. Yeah.
Yeah.
Look,
I go work rate. Work rate, probably Brett, Punk, Foley.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Brett's just the most sound.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
And he was of just course. Great with a variety of guys. I mean, he could really do it with anyone. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, I just, like, I don't like that Brett never really had that all-time classic with Michaels. I know that's almost unfair.
Yeah.
But I don't know why that never clicked for me.
Clicked. Well, look at his shots at it. All right. So, 92, Shawn's wicked, pretty green in that role, right?
Yeah.
And that's a good match, though. Iron Man.
It's hurt by the gimmick.
Yeah, big time. I mean, if you just throw
over the booking than the gimmick. Like, I think they could have done a good Iron Man match if they hadn't have insisted on the one fall.
Or do like I've always said, just eliminate the Iron Man and just have him wrestle for an hour.
Yeah, that would have been fine, too.
And then Montreal. Sorry.
Yeah. Montreal, I think, might be my favorite of their matches.
Right, it's just chaos. So it's like,
yeah.
But, I mean, they never really had the opportunity to go out there and just wrestle when they were both at their in their primes. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Like, Brett's gone during Shawn's best stretch in 96.
Yeah.
You know,
you get
Shawn's
robbed a bit in early 97.
Right. And Shawn's a god in late 97, but they're just done at that point. Even 95, they don't really cross paths in the ring, like where Shawn's just next level for like the whole summer. You know, Brett, they got Brett Meyer and other crap.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, it's never really had the chance to do it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So I think we've narrowed it down. I mean, look, the order CM Punk, Mick Foley, Bret Hart.
If you're a moron. Yeah.
Yeah.
I have kind of convinced myself of Foley maybe deserving to be higher. So I got to think about him versus like Brian. I mean, right. I can't put him over Brock, I don't think. So,
no, I wouldn't do that either.
You know, he may go above Punk and Brian. That's probably the most I can go.
Are you going to put him ahead of Backlund? Or Brett's
Brett's ahead of Backlund. Foley's not.
Are you going to put Foley ahead of Backlund?
No, I don't think I can.
Hmm. See, I might put Foley ahead of Kurt now. Maybe ahead of Punk.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the more we've talked about it, he's just got so much.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I'm arguing for Punk a lot, but I still don't feel convinced on Brett. Like,
yeah.
It just doesn't – there's just too much for me that was disinteresting.
All right. I'm moving Foley ahead of Punk and Brian.
Wow.
I'm putting him to 12.
I'll put Foley at 12, which is Kurt's place. I don't know about Punk yet.
So right now it goes Foley, Brian, Punk, Kurt for me.
Hmm. Mine goes Punk, Foley, Kurt, Brett.
Hmm. Mm. Brock and Brett's an interesting one. I got to think about too.
You have Brock. No, you don't have Brock ahead of him, do you?
No, I have two behind. I have him behind Brett and Backlund.
Yeah, see, for me, Brock is way ahead of Brett. Like, maybe it's me. Like,
let me
maybe
see Brock wear pink.
Like, maybe I just didn't connect with Brett the way so many other people did. And this is coming from someone who actually really liked him. He's probably my favorite wrestler from, like, 91 to, like, 93 kind of thing. But I there's just too many matches where I'm bored during his matches.
It's hard to explain what he was, but he was, like, the paragon of – and kudos to him because he portrayed himself this way so well – the paragon of what is good and right in wrestling. for like 4 years. You know what I mean? Or even into 97. Like, he just was like the guy you could... He built his legacy well as the guy you could believe in after we got scorned by, like, Hogan and those guys. Like, all the steroid guys that turned out to be pill-popping junkies that walked out on the company. You know what I mean? Like, that's how it was positioned in a way. You know what I mean? Like, Brett was the guy that's always been here. He's loyal. He works his ass off. He cares about his fans. He puts in the, you know, he's on TV. He's, even when he wins the title, he's like the fighting champion. That's his gimmick. You know what I mean? Like, he's on TV all the time defending the title against anybody, any comer. He's out there, you know, busting it. And like, that's his thing for like those. And just, it's just endearing as a kid when you're 11, 12, and 13 before you become jaded, right? And turn on him when you're 16.
Yeah.
Which is what happened, exactly. But he's just that guy that's like, he's like your uncle. He's like your uncle that just always was there for you when you needed him. And like, all of a sudden the cool uncle comes back from the bender and the good uncle is like the one you just like, you're old enough now and you're like, I don't need you anymore. I'm going to hang out with Uncle Steve. That's drinking beer and flipping guys off like that. Like, it's almost like that. Like, Brett was this consummate like guy on your shoulder that guided you through these tough years. You know what I mean? Like, that's, he was comfort food. You know, he's just a guy that when he was there, you knew he was going to give it his all. He was loyal. He was a company guy. He was your guy. He was fighting on your behalf for years. And that's just what it felt like. He was just the guy, you know?
Yeah, like, and I hear that. But even that explanation makes him sound like a clear second-tier guy. Like, that, like, you know, like, he's good, he's fine, until someone better's there.
But then I feel like in the end, you always realize he was just better, the better choice. Like, I feel like Vince realizes it like five times, you know? Like, he keeps trying to get away from him. And but, you know what? Brett's really is really good. He's the guy we should be going with.
But also, is that not attrition? Because that being said, like, the guys Vince chose over Brett were not the better choices. But it's not because they're necessarily that great. Like, Diesel's way down the list, right? Like, Yokozuna's way down the list. Lex Luger's way down the list.
Brett's better than Hogan in 93.
Yeah, but... but it's Hogan at the complete tail end of his career.
Yeah.
You would never trade Brett for Hogan in 88 or 87. You know, you would never... it's not even close, right? Like, it's more that, like, he became – like, everything you're saying is right. He was loyal. He was great. He's a fantastic worker. He's a loyal worker. But he was always the second choice. And I think there's a reason he was always the second choice. And I actually don't hold it against him in terms of, like, I love Bret Hart. I think he's great. I have him at 14 on my list. You know what I mean? But when I put him up against guys that have more of a dynamicism to them and more of a – just more of a star quality to them too. Like, not that Brett wasn't a star, but like, he's not as big a star as Brock Lesnar. He doesn't have that connection on the same level as Brock does, for me.
This is the way I look at that. Dylan can beat up Brock, but he can't beat up Brett.
Right. Right. Well, that settles
Brock's
it.
A pussy.
Brock's off the list.
No, but I mean, yeah, I get your point. But yeah. I think there's a component to it, whether it's fair or not in my mind, that like, it's the greatest WWE wrestler of all time, right? Mm-hmm. Brett just is more of a – he's just a WWE. He's Mr. WWE to be in a lot of ways. So I just
– sure.
You know, I just – that's just where he is. That's just what he is. So to me, like, he is a – you know, after Hogan, he may be the best pure WWF person.
Why would you consider – I guess because he didn't leave on his own volition –
yeah, he's just like, I just look at him as like a WWF life. Like, he's just, I don't think he would have ever left if he wasn't forced out the door. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If they didn't kill his brother, you know, like, he probably is back. If Owen doesn't die in 99, I guarantee you Bret Hart is back by 01.
But why do you not put Michaels and Undertaker in that conversation? Well, maybe not in the conversation, but they might be, we didn't discuss that, but
right. Maybe
like, why wouldn't they be ahead of Bret?
I do. I have Shawn ahead of Bret.
No, I'm talking about it just in terms of like being the WWF guy.
I feel like the problems with Shawn that he caused, like, I'm looking at it from a loyal company guy standpoint. So Undertaker to me had a lot of selfish years in there, right?
Okay.
And didn't always do the right thing. I feel like Brett always did the right thing until he was forced to not do it at the very end. I feel like Sean is the same way. Like, just caused a lot of issues, caused a lot of trouble. And this is a totally naive way to look at things. I know. I get it.
And Hogan caused so much trouble.
Right. So you could argue Brett's the best. No, I said they're the top. I said maybe besides Hogan. So I would say they're – and only because Hogan built the fucking company. I mean, that's right. I mean, it's hard to say Hogan's not a WWF guy. You know what I mean? Did he do things that were wrong? I don't know if he was making those decisions. I would argue that he did worse stuff in WCW than he did in WWF.
I would agree with you.
So I don't know if he was the one making those weird decisions for a while. I don't think he gained his full creative stroke until later when he was clinging on too late. But I feel like Brett just – he's the good son. That's it. And I think that counts for this list. We're not talking greatest wrestler ever anywhere. Like, to me, he'd probably be further down. But just WWF guy, I think he's just a top 10 WWF guy. Like, that's it. It's the eye test, I guess, for me in some ways with him.
Hmm.
He's the workhorse, you know. He was a workhorse during a time where it was he was a television workhorse during a time where it was hard to be a television workhorse.
Right. Yeah, for me, it's just like I see that argument, but as soon as I stack him up to the other guys, he falls short.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, might be the story of his career in a lot of ways. Like, we're kind of saying that, like, he was kind of like the second choice.
Right.
So put Bret Hart on your list, guys. Like, don't exclude him, okay? Because he cheated on his wife a bunch of times.
Yes.
He told us. He let it all out in that book.
He did. Okay. Let it all out. All right. This was fun.
All right. So on to our next.
Yeah, we were planning to do two triple threats, but guess what? This went an hour 40, so we're going to stop here. Maybe we'll save the second one for next time. It'll be a fun one, we promise. So just ignore what you heard in the beginning. And I think we'll end here. So be sure
to go back and edit that. You go edit that. You'll be fine.
I will. Be sure to get those ballots in and take all this stuff into consideration. Take all the conversation into consideration. If you have any questions or comments about the project, let us know. I also want to give a real quick plug to the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular. A new episode is coming soon where Glenn and his brother and Steve Willey, the conscience of Place to Be Nation, are going to be doing a Ask Me Anything kind of show, looking for questions or advice they want to give. So it's called Spectacular Advice. You can submit questions on any topic that you're looking for advice on, whether it's life or hokiness or whatever it is you have questions about, at spectacularadvice@gmail.com or at ask.fm/spectacularadvice. That's if you want it to be anonymous, you can do it there. Really, it's just a new advice show. They want your questions. They won't read your names if you don't want them to. Really just a group of really smart guys. If you've heard Glenn or Scott, his brother, or Steve on anything, you know they're insightful guys, they're thoughtful guys. They'll take your questions seriously and answer them seriously. You know, Steve does it professionally, basically. So you're getting really good advice. If you have any kind of issues going on in your life that you have questions about, these guys will do a great job answering. So get those questions in and look for that in the horizon on the PTV and Pop feed. What'd you think of that?
It was long, but it was good because it had a lot of information.
Lots. Just like this whole show.
Yeah. If I could just add one thing at the end here.
Yeah, why not?
Okay, let's talk about the superstar Billy Graham. No, what I wanted to say was if you are making a list, checking it twice, don't let anybody make you feel stupid for your list.
Mm-hmm.
Any comments you see, like, you know, this is your list and who you think the top guys are.
Yeah.
And don't take arguing for attacks because they're not. Like, that's the point of the project. And this project has been fun because we're able to argue and have fun with each other.
Right. Like, look at us. You're a moron.
Yeah.
But we're having a good time.
Yeah. And you can fuck yourself.
Give me the one guy that's on your list that people you expect to get shit about.
Shit? How high I have Sid.
Okay.
You?
I don't know if I'll get a lot of shit, but maybe how high I have some of the mid-80s guys that weren't around a lot.
Hmm.
Like, you've already given me some shit on that.
Yeah, but that's what we do.
Maybe how I have AJ Styles, but I feel like he's gaining popularity in this thing.
Where do you have him? ish.
Right outside the top 20.
Wow. See, I have him right inside the top 30.
Okay. So I probably have him, yeah.
See, I have Sami Zayn right beside AJ Styles. I'll probably get flack for that.
Yeah, that's really high for Sami.
Yeah, but his body work is amazing. Mm. So
AJ's so good. I'm curious where he'd be if we did this like 2 years from now. Could he crack like that? Like the guys right ahead of him are kind of like the elites still. You know what I mean? He's like the last. He's like the guy looking in on the elites, like at the window. Like, could he pass Andre the Giant? Basically, I don't know. Like, what would he have to possibly do to pass Andre the Giant?
Well, look, if he has two more years like he's just had, he's got a better career than Brian, probably.
Yeah. Well, I don't think he'll ever have what Brian had in 14. Brian is carried by so much from that SummerSlam 13 to WrestleMania 14. It's like, I don't know if anyone benefits as much from like a 6-month stretch as he does.
Yeah, that's true.
That's such an epic stretch.
Yeah. I think AJ will have more great matches.
Oh, for sure.
But
he's almost going to be like an angle. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So maybe he could get to that 15. Maybe he gets ahead of the compilers.
Well, he'll be ahead of Bret Hart.
Never. All right. Making the cut. You guys made the cut if you made it this far. So thank you for listening. Get your list in. We'll be back probably at some point before the list is submitted to do another one of these. And then we'll definitely we have some cool ideas planned for after the list starts to come out that we'll be doing. So until then, au revoir, Francois, or whatever the sound is.
It's not Francois.
No. Au revoir, Rich Flair. All right, we're out. Bye. I'm tired.
Gonna happen.